Welcome to this week's episode of The Nerdy Rat. This week, we're taking a question from a loyal listener about enrichment activities for your rats when they're outside their cage playing. And we're also going to talk about the Slime Rancher game and the Doctor Who Christmas special. So here we go.
Hey, welcome everybody to The Nerdy Rat, episode 19. It is the 18th of January, 2018. How you doing, Liz?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Matt?
I'm doing pretty good.
All right.
So, where do you want to start?
Well, why don't we start with our fosters, who we got, our new fosters.
Yeah, we got two new fosters who are actually going to get adopted this Sunday.
Woohoo!
And they have kind of a little sad story.
Happy ending, but...
They came from a home where they were clearly neglected. When we got them, they were emaciated. One of them was under 300 grams, and the other one was just over 300 grams, I think like 320.
And they're about 8 months old,
and they're
right?
Adult, 8-month-old male rats. Mm-hmm. And if... those rats are definitely, like, you could feel all the bones on their back.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as we gave them food, they were just eating it up. And
yeah,
they gained 100 grams in a week.
Yeah.
After
each of them, not together.
Them, yeah.
Like, each of them gained 100 grams. That's like just, a quarter of their body weight.
Yeah, and apparently it was a teenager that just wasn't interested in them anymore.
It was a teenager whose parent had allowed her to get them, knowing that she was going off to college and wasn't going to be able to keep them for their entire life. And then the girl, when she got disinterested, her mother just was like, well, let's get rid of the rats. Not like, let's get your act together and take care of these living beings.
Yeah, teach some responsibility.
Right. And then I have a huge issue with the mother as well, because when they ran out of rat food, apparently, like the week before the rescue came to get them, instead of getting more rat food, they just kind of fed them vegetables or whatever. So the rats were literally starving.
I'm not sure they were feeding them much of anything.
Exactly.
I mean, rats are the easiest animal. If you run out of rat food, you can get them a burrito from Taco Bell and they'll eat it up. So it's like
they were being starved.
That's not an excuse. But they're doing well now. They're very healthy. We got them neutered. They're going to a very loving home on Sunday.
Yes, we're excited about that.
They got adopted really quick.
Yeah. So and they're super sweet boys. And I think that's why they got adopted so quickly. I will say, I think the teenage owner socialized them a lot before she lost interest, because they are very gentle. They're very tame. They're so loving, too. And but it kind of breaks my heart, because they were so grateful that we were feeding them. Like, they were just clearly so grateful.
Well,
to have food.
They've become adamant stashers of food now every morning.
Although
they haven't been stashing their dry food so much, I've noticed.
Oh,
because
really?
They've been leaving that, like, they just kind of go and get food out of that. So,
well, maybe they're
but
feeling more
they,
comfortable
they
now.
They definitely stash all their veggies. Like, as soon as we put them out, they run them back and forth into their igloo.
Yeah.
They're all gone.
And actually, I started putting the food dish in front of the igloo, because the one boy, I had put it like upstairs. We have him in a Martin 680 cage, and I had been putting it upstairs by their hammocks. But the one boy was running each piece of food down to the bottom to his igloo to hide it, and then going back and getting another piece. And he wasn't even pausing to eat. And I was like, he is so stressed out. Like, it made me sad. And so I gave him his own little bowl of food for a couple nights, and I would put it like right in front of the igloo for him. And he appreciates it, because now he goes inside the igloo and he just pulls it into the igloo with him.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have to run back and forth so far.
Yeah,
and now they're okay with sharing a bowl, but I still put it in front of the igloo.
Yeah, once they've started to put on some weight, they're feeling much more comfortable, I think. Like, the first couple of nights, we were making them eggs and oatmeal with brown sugar, and they were just eating everything we'd put out for them, really.
I was putting butter on the veggies when I would do just veggies for them, too, and they needed it. They needed to put on that weight.
Yeah.
You know, also, they're probably not stashing as much dry food anymore, because they have a pretty big reserve at this point.
Yeah.
I'm buried and hidden all over the cage.
Yeah, and that's the same thing that our rats do.
Yes.
Is they... I fill up their bowl with food every morning. Uh-huh. They promptly hide all of it.
Yes.
And then
they eat some of it, but they hide a lot of
they
it.
They act like they're starved, but they are all very, very chubby rats.
But you remember they learned that from Tippy Toe, who was a rat we got through the rescue who had been lost, and she was found outside. And she is the one who really started seriously with the stashing. And I think she taught them all how to do it.
Yeah, well, they all definitely do it now.
Yes. Yes.
Pretty much. There's an order.
Coached.
Even when I give them, when I give them peanuts at night, uh-huh. Dawn has been, she's keeping up this thing where, like, we've had rats before that would come back for more.
Yeah.
Like, shamelessly, but she's really smart about it. She'll take one from me on one level and then run up to the next level and be like, oh, hey, you forgot me. Give me. And then she'll take it on that level. She'll run up to the next level. And then ask for another one, and then run down. Like she
like
keeps
all
changing
four levels of the
she
double
keeps changing. Yeah, like I'm sure if she had like a fake mustache, she'd put that on and be like, "Oh, hello, I am a new rat that you have not given food to yet."
That is really smart because our rat Kaylee used to just be shameless. She'd just like put it away and come right back.
She'd just set it down next to her and be like, "Give me more."
Yep, get ready for my next one. Thank you. Next one.
Because we'd always give her like three.
We spoiled her. I know. And we spoiled Dawn, too. But I think that's really funny that she's so clever that she runs between
the works.
Levels.
She works for it. She earns that extra.
That's right. That's right.
For sure. And so we got a question from our loyal listener. I'm sorry. What was your name? Emily from Vancouver. She wrote us and she had a question for us. She says, my girls have a lot of energy and are always looking for things to explore and figure out. Any suggestions on some stimulating activities or specific items I could provide them, especially during the outside the cage time? And she sent a very cute picture of her rats. Your rats are adorable, by the way.
Yes, they were so cute.
Yeah. But thanks for listening. You've been our, I think you're our longest listener that we've actually heard from that we know of.
Yeah. So yay, Emily, and props to you. And so what I wrote back to Emily, but what we're going to talk about is we actually at one point had made a whole entire little rat city out of cardboard boxes for our rats to play in when they were outside the cage.
Yeah, when we were upstairs, we kind of had an extra room that we weren't doing anything with
before
at the
time.
Before we renovated it.
Yeah.
And we built an entire city out of just like boxes taped together. Mm-hmm. And we had a long box that was
from a curtain rod,
like
I think.
A curtain rod or something.
So
and
it was
so
cool because it had like a little trench in it.
It was like a little monorail for rats.
Yes,
they could run
exactly.
on it. And like basically whatever you have space for, just save cardboard boxes from whatever and just you can put them together like little houses or just they'll just play with them. They'll run around. I usually will bring their wheel out when they're outside too because a lot of times they like that.
Yeah.
I always like now these days when I put them out, I use the Great Wall, which apparently you can't get anymore, but it's a giant piece of plastic that's basically like a 3-foot wall that you can, so they can't
Velcro
like
it together. So it's like
so
a circle.
Like,
so you keep them in.
Yeah. So they won't like run around
like
your room
area.
And like chew
disappear.
Wires and stuff like that and disappear.
Yeah.
And, then I'll put like boxes in there, you know, paper, bedding and the wheels and give them toys and little enrichment stuff. And
a couple of things I noticed when we were doing like the rat city upstairs is that because rats are genetically programmed to watch for overhead predators, they actually didn't like running between the boxes when there was too much open space between the boxes. So what I discovered is that I had to put the different boxes kind of close together. And like some of them, if it's like an Amazon packing box and you flip it upside down, it's got like the flaps that hang down, but they have to be close enough together so that they can run from one to the other without too much open air space.
Yeah, they like exploring, but they also like they're going
to
feel more safe. And if you want, like a good idea if you have space is to like take like a blanket and take some boxes and then put the blanket on top of the boxes and then they can just run between the boxes underneath the blanket. Or like if you're playing with them on the bed, you can have the blanket out and then they can run underneath the blanket. They really like that.
Yeah.
You know, or so we do a lot of times now where we'll get them out in the bonding pouch and then have them on a recliner or a chair, uh-huh. and then you put the blanket over yourself, and then they run. They can they'll run out of the pouch and run all over and
in and out of the blanket and stuff. Yeah,
yeah. It's just if they're in an open space, they are going to tend to be very skittish, and they'll try to go to like a hidden place. Cover. So that's why, like, if rats get out of the cage, they're likely going to run behind stuff, behind furniture. Yeah. Underneath furniture. Now you can try and like if you have a room that like you don't have anything where they can't get in that you can't get underneath to grab them if you need to.
Right.
You could kind of like rat proof a room and let them do it. And basically how you would do that is just anywhere along the wall, any edges, basically anything
like
that
under
they
the doors,
anything that they could chew, you want to put cardboard right. there because they can still chew the cardboard, but likely they won't get through it to chew what's underneath. And it's kind of similar to like people that have bunny rabbits do the same thing where they'll bunny proof a room by putting cardboard up against all the walls. You put uh-huh. any furniture because basically the rabbits, just like rats, will chew anything.
Mm-hmm.
So you basically got to cover every corner and edge with cardboard. And then they can just kind of run around on their own, and they're, you know, and also make sure they have like chew toys and stuff too. Uh-huh. So they do have something to chew
yeah,
on.
Yeah. And they like to chew on the boxes too. So, you know, and one thing we did with the boxes too, is we cut some holes out of like the top of the boxes so they could, pop up like through the boxes, you know, so they wouldn't just mm-hmm. run underneath them, but we cut some doors out and we would cut some ceiling skylights out so they could yeah. pop up.
You could also just make little tiny holes and they'll make their own doors once they can get their little in there to chew it all out.
Yeah. Although I think sometimes that works better in a cage because it does take them some time to chew through it.
Yeah,
like if you just
true.
Want them to play outside, and I think they need a little bit of,
one thing I did
more prepped stuff outside.
One thing I did when we had the room upstairs too, is we had one of those big, Sterilite like plastic bins.
Mm-hmm.
And basically I would put all the boxes inside of each other and then put them in that bin. And then I like the cage, like one of the cages would go on top of that bin. So it was like a stand for one of the rat cages and it contained all of that stuff. And then
the
it would like expand into a giant rat city.
Yeah,
when I
exactly. Exactly. So we were able to put the boxes away when we weren't using them and then we could put them back out. And just some rags too. Like you don't even need like a whole blanket, but if you just have like some rags or some old sheets or old t-shirts.
Save any old hammocks that you can't use
anymore.
Yeah,
they love to
that.
Have those like under the boxes and like run through them and snuggle and run under them. So yeah, there's a lot you can do that they will really enjoy, and most of it has to do with cardboard boxes.
Yeah.
But so. For some inside the cage enrichment, one thing I've done is we have a suet feeder, which is one of those wire boxes that's like a bird feeder thing. And I put scraps of fabric because I do a lot of sewing. So I put like fabric scraps inside the box and I hang it inside their cage. And then they pull out the fabric scraps and they nest it. So they have to like get them all out, which is fun for them.
Yeah.
And then they build a nest with it.
If you don't have that too, you can put that in the inside of their cage.
Oh yeah. You can do that too. But I find they pull it in a lot quicker if it's just in the edge of the cage. Like I think with the suet feeder, they really had to like work to get it out. But you could also do it one with like a toilet paper roll and just poke some holes in it and put like a little bit of the fabric coming out. And one thing I've done is like with a paper towel roll, I've put treats inside it and like folded the edges closed, and they had to and I punched holes in it so they could smell the treats, and also I would like shake it so they would know the treats were in there. But they would have to yeah, it did. And the funny thing, we actually have a video on our Nerdy Rat YouTube page, I think, because Toro was the only smart one who was able to be persistent enough to get it out. Like everybody else just gave up, but Toro was like, no, I'm figuring this out. There's treats in here and Toro is going to get them. And indeed he did. And then everybody else came and got them. So yeah, check out our YouTube page. Actually, we have not done a good job of updating that, so we need to take some more videos for that. But
yeah, well, we don't
that
have
is one
like
of the few videos that's on there.
Yeah. We have links to it on our homepage if you want to check that
yeah,
out.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's on the nerdybat.com and you can link to it on the YouTube page.
Yeah, those are just some of the things we've done. There's a lot of other ideas out there too.
Yeah, but those are some DIY ones.
Yeah, and check out our Pinterest page too, because you post stuff like that on.
I do. When I find good stuff like on Pinterest, I post on the Pinterest board some DIY enrichment stuff.
Yeah.
There was one that I thought was so cute. It was kind of the cardboard box idea, but someone had cut the holes in the side of the cardboard box and then painted little pictures. So it was kind of like at the zoo when they have like a picture of a dinosaur and you can like put your head through where the dinosaur's head would be.
I've seen those before, yeah.
And like they did like little mermaids, and it was so cute because I think on the Pinterest board it was a hamster, but when they stuck their little head through, they looked like the little the little picture, and it was really super cute. You can get some cute photo ops doing that. And for Halloween, actually, I carved a jack-o'-lantern for them. I carved a ratty out of it, actually, and that was on our Facebook page. But what I did then is I put it inside there with them, no candles, don't put a candle. But then it was so cute because they were crawling through the holes and they were crawling out the top of the pumpkin, and like they just crawled all inside it and crawled outside it, and that's safe for them to eat the seeds and the pulp. So they had a lot of fun with that.
Yep.
So.
All right.
So that's enrichment.
Yeah. So there's a news story related to rats.
Yes.
That you found. This was from the BBC, and I saw this a couple days. This actually came out a couple days ago.
Uh-huh.
An article by Victoria Gill posted on the 15th. I'll put a link to it in our show notes.
Yeah.
But the title is "Black Death Spread by Humans, Not Rats."
Yes.
And from the article, it says. So they're talking about this guy. They were doing a study.
Now, this is going back to like the Middle Ages with the Black Plague, right?
Yeah, let me just read from the article. The study in the proceedings of the National Academy of Science uses records of its pattern and scale, talking about the Black Plague, the Black Death, the Black Plague, bubonic plague. The Black Death claimed an estimated 25 million lives, more than a third of Europe's population, between 1347 and 1351. In quotes, we have good mortality data from outbreaks in 9 cities in Europe. Professor Nils Stenseth, I'm going to say that wrong, Stenseth?
I don't know, I'm not looking at it.
From the University of Oslo told BBC News, so we could construct models of the disease dynamics. He and his colleagues simulated disease outbreaks in each of the cities, creating 3 models where disease was spread by rats, airborne transmission, and fleas and lice that live on humans in their clothes.
Okay, so they had like 3 models.
Rats, so these were models that they did.
And fleas and human lice.
Yeah, and lice that live on humans.
That live on humans,
It says, in 7 out of the 9 cities studied, the human parasite model was a much better match for the pattern of outbreak.
That's right. Not
the rats.
Yeah,
it mirrored how quickly it spread and how many people it affected. The conclusion was very clear, said Professor Stenseth. The lice model fit best.
Ha. Vindication for the rats.
He followed that up. He said it would be unlikely to spread as fast as it did if it was transmitted by rats.
That's right.
It would have to go through this extra loop of the rats rather than being spread from person to person. And that makes a lot of sense
when you think about it.
Because I know, like...
People had cats. Like, it wasn't like they were going around getting bit by rats all the time.
Yeah, like...
that was a civilized time in history.
Just thinking about, like, rats, like, okay, we have a lot more technology today, but I still, like, I would never interact with a wild rat in a city. Like, D.C. is one of the more infested rat cities, and, like, I can count on one hand the number of times I run into a rat in the past 5 years.
Yeah, you know? You have to remember, even though this was the Middle Ages, you might have more rats in the public common areas. However, 1300s, that's pretty advanced. Yeah. I mean, they were doing a lot of stuff by the 1300s. And also, people have been dealing with rats for millennia. They knew how to have a cat and how not to get bit and contaminated from anything that might be spread by a rat.
And most modern, like every modern outbreak you see, too, it's always... person to person, like it's never sometimes you'll get like the swine flu was originated from swine transmission, but it was all passed person to person because you have way more interaction with other people, especially if they all had lice. That's gross, but that's also
I think that fits historically much better, that you would expect to find a lot of people with lice versus a lot of people
contaminated. I had heard they said that it was fleas on dogs and rats.
Uh-huh.
And I could kind of buy dogs a little bit more, but not that many people.
Not rats.
Yeah.
And I don't even know.
I'm not really buying it.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Because, I mean, like, you see a cute dog walking down the street and you give it a little pet and then you get the bubonic plague. I could kind of see that happening. But it's more likely, like, you know, interacting with the general public, would make a lot more risky than.
Well, and especially with how quickly it spread and how many people died. Yeah. So
that's
right. You can own as many rats as you want as long as you have a large enough cage.
And we have antibiotics now, too, so you don't really need to worry about
that. Yes, you don't need to worry too much about the bubonic plague.
I don't think the bubonic plague is making a comeback anytime
soon. Probably not.
But I like that. Yeah, I think that's good vindication for.
Yes, absolutely.
In this article, they pick the most unflattering picture of a rat. It's just like his mouth open. It's like,
that's mean.
She just get a picture like Marty Mouse and like.
I know. And be like, look, these cute little love bugs did not cause all this death and destruction. That's right. But I will say one thing, actually, they have been causing is, unfortunately, I have developed allergies to our rats.
Yeah. This is all new within the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, like within the last, at this point, it's probably like 2 months. It was a little bit after Thanksgiving when I first noticed it. And I noticed it with Matt's mom's dog was causing me some allergies and irritation. And then a couple of my piano students had dogs and I teach at their houses. So I was noticing it then. But then it spread to the rats, and especially when they touched me. But it got to the point, like, I couldn't even breathe when I came downstairs. We keep them in the finished basement downstairs, and I couldn't even breathe sitting down here. And it wasn't anaphylaxis. Like, it wasn't like my throat was closing up like that, but it's like really tight chest, runny nose, sometimes sneezing, more sneezing with the dogs, stuffy nose, itchy, watery eyes. And especially with the rats, I would notice as soon as their fur touched me, and actually the licking too, which is like the cutest, most wonderful part of loving a rat or being loved by a rat, I should say. And unfortunately, it's the saliva and the dander that spreads the allergies, that cause the allergies. So I have been really miserable.
Yeah, and we've been working on it too. We're not going to be getting rid of our animals.
Oh no! I'm never getting rid of our animals. Our plan of attack is
kind of going to be multiple. Like, the first thing I did was I got an air filter for down in the basement where
the rats are. One of those air purifiers. It's like
an air filter. It's got a charcoal filter in it.
Yeah, and it's like one of those HEPA charcoal filters. So we got a nice one, too. We didn't get just the cheap one. We got a nice one, and we put it by my chair specifically in my computer.
Yeah, and I just leave it running all the time.
Yeah, and I went to see an allergist right away. And, once I figured out it was allergies and that they weren't going away, I went to see an allergist. And she, of course, did all the testing on my back. And she also did special testing for rats. And actually, she wasn't sure if she was going to have the tighter thing for the rat in the office. She said I might have to go get blood drawn to get that tested, but actually she had it. So yes, sadly, I am allergic to cats, dogs, and rats. I have to go get the blood work done to see if I'm allergic to the parakeets, because she did not have parakeets
office. And then down the line, we're looking at getting you allergy shots.
Yeah, I have some medical issues I have to resolve around epinephrine before I can get cleared to take the allergy shots. But I didn't know that they don't even help until you've had them for like a year, and then it's a 5-year process to get desensitized.
Imagine it's like a flu shot, but it takes a lot of repeated shots to actually build up that that resistance that you get from
like
a flu shot.
And I knew it was going to be a process, but I thought it would be helping me sooner than like a year. So in the meantime, she said take an over-the-counter like Claritin or Allegra. I'm having good success with Claritin. And actually at Costco, a year's supply of Claritin was $12.
Yeah, that's 365
pretty, that's tablets is $12. It was the off-brand. It was the generic, you know. But hey, all right. And I noticed, too, like it took several days of being on the Claritin before I noticed a lot of relief. But it's definitely helping. And what I do now is like I wash my hands after I touch the cat or the rat. I'm still kissing the kitten and the rats because, of course, how can you not? But I do wash my hands. And then when I snuggle with the rats in the bonding pouch, Because they would crawl in and out, and they'd like run up and down my legs and my bare feet and lick my feet, which I love. But I've started doing like a double layer cover. So I cover my legs and my feet and tuck them all in really good with one blanket. And then I put another blanket on top because they like running under a blanket. So then they can run under the one blanket and on top of the other one.
Yeah.
And I'm not getting the...
You know, just to say, I had a lot of allergies as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I was basically told at one point that I was allergic to everything in Florida because I grew up in Florida.
Yeah.
And I had allergy shots for many years.
Yeah.
And to this day, I don't really have hardly any allergies.
Yeah, because it really does work. You. Yeah.
It's basically you're building up an immunity very slowly over time by being exposed to this, like,
right. Well, and she said they minimally increase the dose little by little by little each time, and it starts out with weekly shots, and then after a while you go down to monthly shots.
Yeah.
But the problem is there is a risk of having an anaphylactic reaction anytime you get your allergy shot. So you have to be able to take the epinephrine. So if I can't get cleared for the epinephrine, I'm not going to be able to get the allergy shots. But we're just knocking on wood, hoping. I haven't done another doctor's appointment in a couple weeks.
And we'll give updates as how it's going. We'll do each episode. We'll have an allergy update and see how you're feeling.
Oh, Lord. I don't know if each episode, but it'll be a very short segment. We'll have some. But. And actually, our coordinator for Small Angels mentioned that I might have allergy-induced asthma because of the tight chest, but I did talk to the allergist, but I will talk to her again at my follow-up appointment and see if there's any possibility that asthma is related and if asthma medicine would help. We shall see.
And
too much drama.
Yeah, you wanted to talk about the Etsy.
Yes. We have to mention my Etsy shop, and I sell the bonding pouches, and I also sell some hammocks. And by the way, I have Wonder Woman hammocks available now, which also have Supergirl and Batgirl on them. So they're pretty freaking awesome. But I had wanted to put some little labels that say thenerdyrat.com on the pouches and the hammocks. And I wanted like a little rat graphic to put with it. And I found this awesome shop on Etsy. It's called KJ Arting, and it's by someone whose name is Kylie Johnston, and we'll have a link to their Etsy shop in our show notes. And she had this awesome computer designed rat graphic, so it wasn't something that I had to like scan in or anything like that. And she was able to I worked out a deal with her because you do have to abide by the artist licensing, and she had it normally licensed for like not for selling things. Like you could use it for your personal use if you bought it from her, but not to sell things. But I worked out a licensing deal with her and she filled it in for me. So it's like a nice solid black rat graphic. And now it goes on my little labels, and I will put a picture of that on Facebook and Twitter. And I have this awesome little rat label now. So
very
I love
cool.
it. Yes.
Very cool.
So if you buy something from me, you'll get to see it in person.
Mm-hmm.
The graphic and the label. Yay.
Yeah. So did you want to talk about the Eagles, or do you want to save that?
Oh, well, the DC Eagles. We'll post some videos. There's been this squirrel repeatedly stealing the moss from their nest.
This sounds hilarious
repeatedly.
To me.
Yeah, it is, because it's this ongoing drama. Like, they keep tidying up their nest and like putting in more moss and more sticks and all that, and then this squirrel comes along when they're out and steals the moss.
Have they seen the squirrel? Or
yeah, the squirrel has been captured on video with the eagle cams.
But have the eagle seen the squirrel?
I don't know if the eagle has seen the squirrel or not, because I would think that an eagle would try to kill the squirrel, don't you think?
The eagle would totally eat that squirrel.
Yeah, so
and you would have a very bloody eagle cam.
Yeah, this could be like an R-rated eagle cam before you know it. So yeah. As far as I know, the squirrel is smart enough to only do it when the eagles aren't there.
Yeah, hopefully.
So, yeah.
Stay smart, little squirrel.
That's right. Hang in there. Hang in there. So we'll post some of the latest videos of the squirrel drama.
All right.
So did you want to talk about a Nintendo? Transitioning to nerdy news.
Yeah, let's talk about nerdy news.
That's what I was going to do.
You've been playing Slime Rancher.
Yes.
I got that for you for Christmas.
You did. And it was one of the most popular Steam games that came out in 2017.
You had put that on your wish list. I knew a lot of people liked it. So
mm-hmm.
I figured
it got a lot of good ratings. So the concept of Slime Rancher, it's basically how it sounds. You live on a little alien planet in outer space, and you are a rancher For slimes. They're living slimes, of course. And
you have like a big variety of slimes. Yes. You can
there's many.
Capture
and I
grow.
Will say it was a little bit hard to figure out at first how the game worked because there wasn't a lot of instruction. And my problem was I was only finding like three types of slimes. And so what you can do is you can just go. They drop these little things called ports. And it's like a little crystal. And then you can sell the crystals for money and get upgrades for your ranch and get science labs and all this cool stuff. So I, at first, didn't know what the heck I was doing. And all my slimes were dying. And it just wasn't working. And then finally, I figured out some things. So, like, you can keep them in a little pen on your ranch. But basically, you have to pay to upgrade the walls to be high walls. Because if you just have the regular baseline walls, they're going to jump out of it.
Oh,
so
no.
You basically automatically need to get the high walls.
Now, I saw that you had cat slimes.
I did. They're the best. They're called tabby slimes.
How do you get cat slimes?
Well, just the way you get any other slime. So the thing you have in this game is like a suction kind of gun. It's kind of like a vacuum cleaner gun. And you go around and you like vacuum things into your little vac pack. And then you can like shoot them out again. Like it doesn't kill them to suck them up. So like I vacuumed up a bunch of tabby slimes. And then I went to my ranch and I built a little pen for him and I built the high walls and I shot him in. And then I was having some trouble because they were getting very distressed and hungry. And when they're hungry, their little mouth drips blood and they look all angsty and emo and depressed.
Oh.
And I was like, tabbies, what's wrong? I've been feeding you. And I was feeding them like fruit and vegetables. And it turns out the vegetarian is so upset by this, meaning me. The tabby slimes have to eat chickens, live chickens. So because there's chickens in the game. And so you can run around and catch the chickens and you can catch like the roosters and breed them. And you can catch like little chicky chicks. And then the chicks grow up to be chickens and roosters and hens. So I've had to run around catching chickens on a regular basis and feeding them to my little cat slimes.
So you can't just pick up some slime cat food at the 7-Eleven?
I wish. That should be like a science upgrade where you can just get like pre-canned meat so you don't have to kill it yourself.
You don't have to think about it. Yes.
Yeah, I know. It's sad. And now it's like, here I am, the vegetarian, running around catching chickens because I have to feed my little cats because your cats need meat. They can't survive without meat. And that's not their fault. It's just their genetics.
Just like real life.
Yeah, but in real life, I get to just have a can of cat food. I don't have to go throw a live chicken at the cat and be like, here,
well,
cat, yum.
Some vegans will not have cats for that reason.
Well, I can understand that because you will kill your cat if you don't feed it meat.
Yeah.
I know some evil vegans have tried to do that and
failed.
Yeah,
don't do that to your cat.
No, well, you'll kill your cat. Mm. So, yeah, if it bothers you, then no, you can't own a cat. Or a meat-eating pet, no. But
yeah.
But I do understand that. It's difficult. And
So would you recommend this game to...
I would. I hope they will keep doing some updates with it.
Is it like a farming game, mostly?
Yeah, basically, except you're like a rancher because you own the live animals.
Right,
but you can actually have little garden plots where you grow like the different fruits and vegetables so that you always have food for the vegetarian slimes. I will say I'm playing on the free play mode. I don't know if there's a lot of story. It's a little bit more of just like an open sandbox type of thing. And it might be nice if there was like a little bit more of a story. But so far, because I'm still figuring things out, I really like it.
So is it an early access game?
Not sure. I know they're still planning to do updates for it, so I'm not 100% sure.
Because I've noticed
with
some of these early access games.
I don't know if it's
games,
early access.
I'm
you could look it up on Steam. So while you're looking
Steam.
Up, one thing
no,
I had a lot
not.
Of trouble with was that
doesn't say it is.
To access different parts of the planet, you needed a slime key. And I could not, for the life of me, figure out how to get a slime key. I'm like, where do you get the slime key from? And I was getting frustrated. I had to Google it. So there were like these giant, giant slimes. I think they're either called Gordo or Largo. There's two different types. I don't know. I think they're Gordo slimes. So they're like these giant, giant slimes. And apparently what you have to do is feed them like 50 of their food item in a row. You can't just go and find it and come back and find it. So you have to upgrade your backpack to be able to carry that much. And then you have to feed them like 50 in a row of their food item. And then they pop, which was very upsetting to me. Again, like I didn't want to kill them, But then it turns out they're actually like a whole bunch of smaller slimes stuck together, and they just pop into the little slimes. So that's okay. Nobody's dying. It's just like separating. It's like the Transformers when like Destructicon separates into the Constructicons.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's like that. So they go back to being Constructicons.
That makes sense if they're slimes.
Then. Exactly. So, but then sometimes, not always, but sometimes those big ones will drop a slime key, and then you can access the different areas of the ranch. Oh. So I still have a lot of areas I haven't accessed yet.
Very cool.
Yeah, but it's pretty fun. I just hope I don't get bored with it once I've figured everything out. You know?
Those games can be like that. Like Starbound was like that for me. I was really into it for like when I was playing it, and then I kind of like ran out of stuff to do in the game.
Exactly. So I'm kind of hoping that I think there is too like a more goals oriented mode that I could have played in where it's like you have to earn so much and so much time or whatever. But we'll
see. Like a survival mode.
Yeah, but see, I don't know that I want a survival mode. I think I just might want a little bit more of like a story mode.
You prefer more of a casual experience.
Yeah.
Because I know in Starbound you were getting a little frustrated when when we would die.
Well, Starbound, yeah.
Starbound is a bit of a difficult game.
Even
on the easy modes, it's like...
I have never cursed so much since I was in college and my roommate brought the Super Nintendo in, which neither one of us was good at.
Speaking of Nintendo...
Yes! Speaking of Nintendo,
Nintendo had an announcement the other day for their new product called Labo. And I saw this trailer and it starts out really strange. It's like it shows like they were manufacturing these cardboard items. I didn't know what it was.
Mm-hmm. And but you knew it was a Nintendo thing.
So
right?
I knew it was Nintendo, but I was like, what is this? So it's basically like these cardboard kits that you build all these different things. Like they're like one of them was a piano. Mm-hmm. They had a fishing rod, like a race car thing.
Mm-hmm.
Even had one that was like a giant robot. It played in this game where you like if you punch on this robot,
mm-hmm.
this cardboard robot backpack, if you mm-hmm. punch, then your character on screen would punch.
Mm-hmm.
And it just looks so cool. It's kind of like Legos, but like it's all stuff you make out of cardboard
mm-hmm.
out of these kits.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently there's two kits. There's the robot kit, which I think is like $100 or something. And then there's like the other kit, which is like $80, which has all the other little stuff that it showed in the trailer.
Oh. But now, does it come with a game for the $80 and $100?
I think so. I think it is going to come with the video games that interact with those. Because
if it was just $100 for a cardboard box, I would be a little upset about that.
I was watching this and I was like, man, this kind of makes me wish I had a Nintendo Switch, even though I don't really have a desire to get a Switch.
I know.
And it's got like a lot of tools that are like you can make your own kind of things too.
Uh-huh.
Which looked really cool.
Well, I'll be curious to see what the games are like that interact with the cardboard things. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It looks cool and it's kind of ingenious because you make them out of cardboard. Kids are going to destroy them after a year and then they're going to be like, oh, let's get another one. Yeah. The disposable item. But it just looks so cool. They've got like a gun and I'm not sure what the house is for, though.
I don't
They've got
either.
One that's just like a house and the controller goes on top of the house. I'm like, what do you do with a house?
Like, I don't know. It looks like it had like a little wind-up key on the side, but I don't know what you do with it.
Yeah, I didn't.
Yeah,
get,
so I'll be curious when they release more of like the videos of what you actually do with the stuff. I guess like it's a cool concept, though.
Yeah, it's got like you make little robots out of them and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
and I will say it is. It does look like heavy duty cardboard. It's not just like
it kind of reminds me of like the Google cardboard 3D glasses.
Exactly.
That they had.
That's exactly what I was thinking of.
Yeah, it's like that, but it looks so neat. And it's like great, like kids are gonna go crazy for this stuff.
Yeah, I think so.
And they're gonna destroy it too.
Probably.
But that's part of the fun, I think.
I guess. I hope. Yeah. So why don't you talk about what else you've been doing related to I don't know if that's much of a transition.
You know, I've been
talk about what you've been doing with the computer.
Well, I've been really into watching YouTube videos of people restoring and just talking about old electronics and old computers and stuff.
Uh-huh.
So and I used to be a computer repair guy. I was a guy who fixed computers for people, so mm-hmm. We were at the thrift store and I saw an old Pentium 3 for $8.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, well, I'll buy this computer for $8 and see what I can do with it. And I did some experimenting. I tried replacing the hard drive. Like, the hard drive was bad in it, so that needed to be replaced. Okay. And it needed to have Windows reinstalled and a few other things. Like, mm-hmm. I think one of the memory chips was bad, so I pulled that out. But basically just wanted to restore it to the way it was originally. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at some of the options for Compact Flash to replace the hard drive. So basically that would give it, like, kind of a solid-state drive. Which I thought would be cool.
Okay, you're totally losing me here. So, this is like way over my head. Techno. I know you want to do something on a flash drive, right?
Yeah, so basically it's like using a modern like memory card uh-huh. as the hard drive of the computer.
Okay, I understand that.
Okay, so, but apparently you can't do that because they found out that people were doing this with Compact Flash and uh-huh. they made it so you can't do it unless you buy their more expensive industrial Compact Flash.
Oh, that's BS.
Because they set a little...
God forbid somebody has fun.
They set a flag on the on their cheap drives that say this is removable disc only.
Oh my!
I didn't find this
gosh.
Out till I was about $50 deep into Amazon CF card purchases, but luckily Amazon let me return it all, and I ended up just buying like a replacement regular hard drive for $20.
Oh, okay.
And I reinstalled Windows 98 on it, so that's kind of my project now. Is just.
That's ridiculous, though. Why should they care if somebody wants to have fun?
Well, I think because basically if you wanted to buy like a similar solid state drive that would do the same thing, it was like $100.
Oh.
And these compact flash cards were like $15.
Oh.
Or $20. Oh. And they've caught on to what people were doing and like, well, we'll just
like we're just
we'll
gonna make
do
a
this
profit.
And then they still make Compact Flash that'll do that, but uh-huh. you got to pay the more expensive. Like, I think the cheapest one I saw was like $40 or something for like a 4 gig drive.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason that people were able to do that, this is really ingenious, is that the way that Compact Flash cards in particular connected and like exchange data
mm-hmm.
was based on the same technology that these old hard drives used. It was just miniaturized to use for the Compact Flash.
Oh, okay.
So basically, the first people that started doing this, you could basically get a little adapter, plug it into uh-huh. these old computers, and it would act exactly like a hard drive.
Yeah, okay.
So
that is pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. Yeah. It was a fun experiment to try, but... I ended up just returning it all and just doing them. But it's fun. I hadn't installed Windows or 98 on a computer in so long or played with it.
Yeah.
And I forgot how archaic the thing is. But
well, now, do you have any old games that you want to play on it?
Or I had a copy of Diablo, which I installed on it, and that ran really good.
Oh,
so
cool.
I'm still looking for older DOS games and stuff uh-huh. to play. They're kind of hard to collect for because... You don't see them like at thrift stores very often. Like you can order them off eBay, but you're going to pay kind of the premium off eBay for them. I mean, you can always download them if you want to, but mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of downloading software. I'd rather either get a hold of it or like just buy it, you know?
Uh-huh.
But no, that's kind of been my hobby for the past couple of weeks. I don't know if I'm going to do more or not. I might try and sell this one on eBay if I get around to it, but I might just keep it and play around with it.
Yeah, well, either way, that's pretty fun.
Yeah.
It's great to have a hobby.
So he says you've been playing Costume Quest?
Yes. That's
what is Costume Quest?
Well, that's another one of like my 99-cent games Steam.
Boy.
Although for $1.99 on sale, I got Costume Quest and Costume Quest 2.
Oh.
So this is like a pixelated game, I think.
Voxel?
Maybe, yeah. Voxel. Probably Voxel because it's not like super, super old school. It's like it's Halloween night and... You and your little brother were sent out to trick-or-treat in the neighborhood, but oh no, aliens are in the neighborhood and they want to steal all the candy because it's
aliens.
Yeah, because it's like important to them or something. Or maybe they're like goblin aliens. I don't know, but they're trying to steal all the candy. So it's kind of fun because it's kind of like an RPG where you go around and you fight. So as you trick-or-treat through the neighborhood, every time you knock on a door, you either have a chance for it to be the goblin and you have to fight, or it's going to be just like a person and you get candy, which is like your money. And what's interesting to me is with the fighting, it's not your typical RPG where you pick what attack you want to do and you take turns and all of that. It prompts you with four keyboard strokes, and you have to hit the right key at the right time to launch your attack, or else you miss.
So it's
really kind of cool. You have to be on your toes. That's why, like, I'm always like, don't bother me, don't bother me, when I'm in the middle of a fight.
Right.
Because, like, you have to do it at the right time, or else you're going to probably lose the battle. But I also like it because it's casual gaming, because nothing bad happens to you if you lose the battle. You just have to replay that battle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So this is, like, totally my style of game. And then there's little side quests too. Like, you have to go around and find, like, all the pieces to the different costumes, and you have to solve the little side quests in order to get farther in the game.
It looks super cute.
It is really cute, and I'm having a good time with it. It's, like, really fun, and it's really cute, and it's, like, really well done. Like, so far, very well done. Yeah. Although there were a couple parts that were too hard, and I had to Google
them.
So
you got it for 99 cents?
Yeah, well, I got both of them for $1.99. Yeah.
Oh, cool, because it's normally, like, right now I'm looking at the Steam page, it's $10 and $15.
I know.
Normally. So.
I know. I got, this is deal. Like a super duper duper sale. This is what this is why I put a lot of stuff in my wish list.
Oh, yeah.
Because then it tells you from your wish list what's on sale, when it's on sale.
Whenever there's a Steam sale, my inbox just gets flooded with notices that stuff is on sale.
Because a lot of the games do go on sale. It was like a 90% off sale. So that's cool. Why I got it for like $1.99 for both games. So
very cool.
I'm having fun with it.
All right. So last thing we want to talk about, I guess, we want to talk about the Doctor Who Christmas special.
Yes, which we were about to see before the last podcast, and then we saw it that night after the podcast.
Oh, sorry. We didn't see it on Christmas because we don't have traditional television.
Yeah,
so we just went to go see it in the theater.
Yeah, we went to a Fathom.
And I gotta say, like, I enjoyed the special itself, but I just want to say the Fathom events, like, I wish they would stop playing all that stuff beforehand.
The documentaries,
They're showing, like, a documentary that, like, and they repeated
spoilers!
They showed the trailer, like,
eight times.
Every scene from the trailer got repeated ad nauseum to the point where, when it got to those scenes when we were actually watching them, they held no meaning for me anymore, because it was just
You'd seen them too many times.
A performance that had been repeated to me 20 plus times.
And then they showed a documentary on the making of the special before the special. So it's like you're totally getting spoilers before you see,
like,
the special.
Put all that stuff at the end.
Yeah.
That way, like, because some people don't even want to watch that stuff. Like,
I know. And I felt irked that they were, like, forcing us to watch it and that they were spoiling it. But I have to say, I thought the special was kind of meh. I didn't think it was terrible, but I just thought it was meh. I didn't think it had much of a story. You know, it wasn't the greatest.
Yeah, it wasn't the greatest
piece
of writing.
It wasn't super offensive.
It wasn't bad.
Yeah, well, but it wasn't necessarily good.
It wasn't bad. I thought it was okay. But I think my enthusiasm for it was really lessened by just the ridiculous amount of, how do I say this politely, like, unneeded graciousness towards Stephen Moffat that they had
in the
documentaries before and after.
I know. And we're trying to keep this clean for the rating on the podcast, because your imagination for the more graphic term.
Honestly, like, it just felt like they couldn't get
everyone
off of how
was
great Stephen
stroking
Moffat was.
His ego.
Yeah.
And just, like, use a more colorful analogy.
And it's like, because, like, they even had, like, this is the last reading we're ever going to have of this with Stephen Moffat. And
were
all like, they were just like, oh, he's so great and blah, 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 blah.
I know.
We get it. You like him. He's a good guy. He's done a lot of great stuff for Doctor Who. He's done a lot
he's
of really mediocre stuff.
Trashed the show in the last 2 and 3 years. The last season was actually pretty good with Bill. But prior to that, like, he totally screwed,
like,
Capaldi up.
Yeah,
for
sometimes
his first
you
got to
know when to stop. Stop working
exactly
on something.
The one thing that I did think was slightly amusing was when Peter Capaldi was at the final read and he had to say something, and he of course was, like, kissing Moffat, kissing up to Moffat. I'm trying to edit that politely. Kissing up to Moffat. I wondered if he was not being a bit sarcastic. Because
he might have been.
Because I have read that Peter Capaldi called out the BBC, didn't name names of Moffat, but he said they need to pay more attention to us over here. They think everything's fine over here with Doctor Who, and it is not fine. And, he was talking a little bit about them changing the time of the show very frequently during one of the last
two
seasons.
Yeah, the BBC was not kind to them over that year. They took, like, a sabbatical and stuff.
But, I mean, I felt like Capaldi may have just been saying that because he had to say it, but I felt like he might have been being a little snarky.
Yeah, I could see him doing that.
Yeah.
And I really like Capaldi. Deadpan sarcasm. I like everything about this episode except the last scene with him, where it felt like he was just like his goodbye at the end was like, did you do it? Like, he's like talking to the ship or whatever, and he just goes on. Oh, and he's like,
yeah, always, it went on a lot.
He's like, be kind and don't forget to be kind. And
Another thing, be kind.
He's like trying this like eloquent like goodbye, like he's imparting the knowledge of the world to everybody before he leaves. It's like, I don't know, like it was just a little over the top.
It was a little hokey. And I don't know that it was necessarily in keeping with his doctor. I think his doctor was never that sentimental.
I would like to have seen him go off on a more snarky note, or
yeah,
like just cut it down at the end. Like, cause like you know,
the one
her name showed up.
Clara.
No, Clara. Yeah,
he's like, really have to bring Clara back again?
Well, they gave him back his memories of Clara.
Oh yeah,
like
okay,
was kind of like, and even Stephen Moffat said, "Well, I wanted to fix that," and I'm like, well.
Okay.
Why though? Like it wasn't earned in any way.
And frankly, I forgot because the writing was so bad for the first two seasons. I forgot that he even lost his memories. I was like, really? I don't remember much from those first two seasons with Capaldi because they were just so poorly done.
I'm very hopeful for the future of Doctor Who, though.
I think, with the new showrunner.
Is there Jodie Forster? Is that her name?
I think it's Jodie Whittaker.
Jodie Whittaker, yeah. She looks really good. Yeah,
I hope
she's going to be good. And I'm excited to see a new team get in there and get a
new
crack at it.
New team is what I'm most excited about.
Know, starting over.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could be really good.
I hope they find a way to bring Missy back, because I think it would be very easy to be like, oh, she wasn't really dead. She was expecting
so much
that
until she died.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And it felt like her death was not
meaningless. Yeah, it was meaningless. And I felt like they should have let her restore her relationship with the doctor. That felt very unfinished.
Even if you kill her off, give her a chance to redeem herself.
So that he knows she redeemed herself.
She wanted to redeem herself.
Yeah.
And she finally made that decision. And then, and then it's like pulled away. It's yanked out from underneath her.
Yeah. So I kind of feel like I could easily see where they just said, oh, she was expecting that blast and she was shielded against it and she didn't die. Because I really like her a lot, and I hope it's not the end of her.
Well, if Flash can bring back the Reverse Flash.
Oh, yeah.
With no explanation.
No
they can
explanation
bring back the
whatsoever.
Master.
Exactly. It's like, oh, and speaking of the Master. So I have been watching the original Doctor Who's on BritBox, which is has all the original classic episodes for streaming. And you can add that on to Amazon. You can just subscribe to it for like $7 a month and stream it through Google Chrome or whatever it is, Chromecast. So I have just seen an episode called The Time Meddler. I think this is going to be the Doctor. Because, spoilers. Oh, yeah, the Master. Sorry. Spoilers. But the Master. So because the Time Meddler is another Time Lord and he has a TARDIS. And they haven't, you know, because they're still writing the show. It's still the first Doctor, William Hartnell. But the Time Meddler guy keeps saying, I'm the master of making master plans. I have a master plan. Yeah. And he keeps emphasizing the word master. And I have kind of read ahead because I just got up to all the lost episodes that the BBC doesn't have the footage for anymore. So I had to read the synopses to see what happened. And the Time Meddler comes back. And the Doctor actually stranded him on Earth at the end of his first series because he was meddling with time and that was unacceptable and he was breaking Time Lord law. So somehow though, in one of the missing episodes, he found a way to free his, fix his TARDIS and get off of Earth again. And I'm just thinking like, I think this is going to end up being the Master. I would not be surprised. So
yeah,
I'm just saying.
Could be.
It could be.
But I don't think so.
Why? Did you just Google it?
Maybe.
Are you giving me spoilers?
No.
Spoilers.
No, I'm just...
No spoilers.
I don't know. Maybe. He could be.
Now I'm going to be really mad at you. You're not supposed to spoil things for me.
I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry.
That wasn't nice.
But I'm not sure. I'm not
be
really
be kind.
Sure.
That wasn't kind. Be kind.
Well,
Above all, be kind.
Above all, be kind.
Something else.
Yeah, so
be kind.
Listeners, don't spoil
be kind,
it
listeners.
For us.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So what are the missing episodes? How many
There's
are there?
A lot. It's like almost all of this third season.
When do you know when the Master first shows up?
I don't. I'm not really sure when he first shows up. So
I mean, in the history of Red of the Master, he only shows up like a handful of times throughout the series.
Yeah, but I wonder if it's going to turn into him. So we'll see. We'll see. But what really upset me, though, is I really liked his companion, Vicky. She was like feisty. Well, because the first two women companions were just like hysterical and they screamed a lot and they let the men do everything. And it was just really annoying. And Vicky was feisty and she was smart and she like really bonded with the doctor. And he's already started ripping my heart out because he's like mourning the loss of all of his companions. And it's just getting like really painful.
Yeah.
So
it's
much
not
more
get
so.
Easier.
You're telling me, you know how much my heart got ripped out with like every single modern doctor.
Yeah.
And so, but so now it's killing me though, because when Vicky leaves him is in one of the lost episodes. So yeah. I can't see it. And I'm really upset.
Yeah. Well, there'll never be as weak an excuse as I can't go back to that time. The timeline's too messed up.
No,
For when he lost Amelia and Rory. You remember that? When he had to leave Rory and Amelia Pond.
Well, what, with like the Weeping Angels?
Yeah, yeah. Like the episode that they left. Do you remember how they left?
Yeah, the Weeping Angels.
Yeah, when he was like, oh, we can't go back there. The timeline's too messed up.
Oh.
That was like that was the whole excuse for why they couldn't.
Oh, why they couldn't just go back.
Why they couldn't
go
back and get him. And somebody even posted like, well, why don't we go back to New Jersey and take the train over to New York?
Right. Right, exactly.
So.
Well, I will say it's funny in the first series so far, there is something broken in the TARDIS and they actually can't pick where they're going and they're randomly ending up places. And there's and because it's broken, they can't go back to the same time and place where they once were.
Oh, no.
So when Barbara and Ian left him, who were his first companions, they actually traveled back to Earth in a Dalek spaceship.
Oh.
A Dalek time machine.
And they became Daleks. No,
no, they
I don't
didn't
know.
Become Daleks. No.
So.
But anyway.
All right. Well, thank you everybody for listening. I think that about wraps it up for
yes,
this
for
episode of The Nerdy Rat.
Yes.
And as always, we are, you know, we do this. We don't do this for money, obviously.
No,
but
if you like
if
us,
you like
can
us, you can support one of our charities.
Our favorite charities. They're not our charities, but our favorite charities. Small Angels Rescue. They're the rescue we work with for the rats.
I'm pulling up my...
Okay. And they... I'll just say it from memory. They foster and rescue rats, I think mice, guinea pigs, hamsters, and gerbils, although they need coordinators for a couple of those positions. So if you live in the Maryland, D.C., Virginia area and you're interested, you can certainly help out. And you can certainly help out by being a foster parent as well if you are not interested in the coordinator position. Or you could just give them money if you don't live in the area because we love them and they save a lot of ratties.
Mm-hmm. And Extra Life unites thousands of players around the world in a 24-hour gaming marathon to support Children's Miracle Network hospitals.
Yes. And so, that's what Matt supports through his streaming. He does our DC Children's Hospital.
My streaming once a year.
Yes. Yes.
So one day I might start streaming more. You'll have to keep an eye out for that.
Twice a year. We'll let you know.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, guys. Have a good one.
All right. Bye.